Welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
So I think the human brain or even powerful traditional powerful computers might struggle to interpret and to make sense of such a complex set of data. Not only complex, intertwined, interrelated, and also the huge amount of data as well.
What the glue that connects it all together, Peter, and that's kind of what separate the great from the good, is the use of data.
Extended, your aerospace radio station.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson and welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station Extended, continuing our focus on how data and technology has changed the aviation sector. I'm delighted to welcome Diana Franganilo-Luque, who is the Senior Business Development Manager for Airports at Indra. And I'm also delighted to welcome Udi Sehgal, who is the Chief Executive Officer at Intel Act. Udi, Diana, welcome to Extended.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Peter, for having us.
Diana, let me come to you first. You wrote the article titled "The Quest for the Perfect Aircraft Pit Stop." Before we look at the impact of data and AI on airport operations, what was the background to all of this? How did it come about?
Let's put people in the context and in the situation. Airports are complex operational environments, so they are a whole ecosystem themselves. They have many elements that need to be orchestrated for the operation to go smooth. And why they are complex? Because to start with, we have a variety of passengers. So passengers with different objectives, sometimes they travel for leisure, sometimes for work. And then as well, it might occur that you are the same person, but not the same passenger all the time as well. So I am not the same when I travel with my kids or if I travel for business. So in order to add to that complexity, it's not that that journey starts when you step into the airport. So there is a whole process. I mean, it's not like jumping onto a bus and getting a ticket. It's like you need to buy the ticket in advance most of the times. The process might start, at your place using your phone and off airport methods and means. And then it goes through. You need to arrive to the airport, which sometimes could be a stressful situation. You need to navigate within the airport, which for some people it might be a stressful situation as well, until you board the plane. And then there is the symmetrical process at the other side as well too. So airports involve, as well as the variety of passengers, they involve complex systems. They need to be connected with air traffic management systems as well. People, travel with their luggage as well. Aircraft need to be ready as well for the operation. So we have a number of spinning plates that they need to, to be synchronized and orchestrated for the system to work well and for the operation to run smoothly and for the passengers to have a compelling experience and as little stressful as possible.
Diana, it's really important because there's that whole ecosystem. If I take a journey to the airport, I've got to have my tickets, I've got to have my booking, I've got to make sure the taxi arrives, I've got to make sure my train's on time, I've got to then navigate my way through the airport, but I've also got to know that the tug's on time, that the luggage has been moved on time, that the aircraft is on time and on the bay, that ATC is on time. All these systems are very separate and they don't always work, do they?
Well, I wouldn't be as you know, as hard with the system to say that it is not happening. I would say that there is a room for improvement. And actually, that's our mission, talking about Indra as a technological company. So basically, we want to facilitate that orchestration that I mentioned before. We want to facilitate that everybody is on the same page, sharing information and sharing knowledge about where they are. So
But you're talking about different systems there, aren't you, Diana? You're talking about airlines, you're talking about air traffic control. They're all very different systems. Do they talk to each other?
They do talk to each other. And I mean, there are initiatives and frameworks put in place, particularly at this end of the pond in Europe. So the different stakeholders can share information and have a common situational awareness to ensure that people can make the best decisions and maximize airport's capacity and the capacity of the system as a whole, because it's not only within the airport, but as you mentioned, air traffic before. So it's about connecting airport with air side and then with air traffic management side all the way up to, you know, to your control and the rest of the network, for example. I would say that this is like a nice challenge. If it was easy, probably, you know, it wouldn't be as... As exciting as it is. And the thing is that it is as well great that there is an opportunity for improvement and to make the system better and to refine it over time.
So, Udi, how do you go about dealing with something this big with all those challenges?
So let me just refer back, if you don't mind, to your initial question. You're talking about the quest for the perfect pit stop, because what we're saying about the pit stop and the turnaround is actually the equivalent of the pit stop for Formula One, is that it requires this, as you mentioned, deliberate coordination of, you would like call it maybe choreography, right? Because you have multiple stakeholders that need to be in this, meaning all of them are committed, all right? But it requires a collaboration. I mean, Diana and I, we're sports fans, so we're talking about Michael Jordan, the Last Dance, all right? And the thing is that it's not enough to have the talent, okay? You need to create the team. You need to create the team spirit. And it took Michael Jordan like 9 years to win the first championship in the NBA. So it's an effort. And the fact that you've got the talent and you've got the right coach and everything is not sufficient to guarantee the results, because it requires, and we're just talking about five or players that are playing. So think about the complexity of an airport, and then it's magnified. So it's really critical that you have the ecosystem or the framework, as we like to call it, which is the ACDM that we're going to talk about in a second. But what the glue that connects it all together, Peter, and that's kind of what separates the great from the good, is the use of data. Like, yeah, good intentions, yeah, checks from the all airlines. No airlines say we want to be late, right? No airport will promote that. But what distinguishes good airlines from average one, or good airports from average, is the fact that they're using data in a meticulous way. And more importantly, that the data is reliable. What often happens is that if the data is not reliable, then you're not making the right decision. And then people start to second guess. And when people start second guessing the system, which often happens, then this is where the culture that we want to create of collaborativeness and togetherness, this is where it falls apart, because you say, I don't trust what I see. Yeah. And then everybody's for themselves and everybody retreat. So if I need to summarize, it always comes to one word, which is trust. You need to trust the information that you see. You need to trust that your teammates are just committed to the mission that you have. Because what often happens, and Diana and I talked about that, is that the blame game starts. Meaning, and you kind of alluded to that, is that the air traffic control, is that the ground handler, is this the airline, is this the passenger, is this the stewardess? The blame game can be endless. And if you're going that rabbit hole of who is to blame, you're losing. Okay? And unfortunately, we see environments where this is what, just to put the blame on the outer players, and we're trying to change that. And what we're trying to change it is by building, I mean, not us building trust, but hoping that once everybody has the same information and it's shared across all the stakeholders have the same information, we think that everybody will make a better decision. So that's kind of the mystery. Yeah, that's...
It's interesting you talk about people not trusting the system there, Udi, because as a passenger, I don't trust any of the data. So what I do is I have two, maybe three apps. I have an airline app, I have the airport app, I have my flight radar app. And normally, two will say the same thing, but one's always just a bit different.
That's the tricky part with data, that winning trust is very difficult, losing trust is very easy. Okay.
Yeah.
So the reliability of the data, and this is something that we'll keep referring to, and that's the bar that we hold ourselves, is yes, you need to be reliable enough so you won't question the app. If you start questioning the app in the same way you talk about passenger, but think about ground handler. He needs to be in a certain point in a certain time. Let's say the fueling service, all right? Can he trust the system? Can he trust the original schedule he got in the morning? Can he trust the work? What system does he trust? And this type of thing, and this kind of mistrust that you don't have a one reliable source of information is very corrosive to organization.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can think about your role as the media. I mean, I can talk about as an Israeli. You know, BBC was the gold standard for public broadcasting. Okay, if it wasn't the BBC, you know it was true. But now we're talking about how many, before the call, you and I talked about how many podcasts there are. Okay, how would you know if what you hear on this podcast is reliable? Can you trust that? That's an issue that is facing all of the media outlets today, because there is no, you didn't have ask for permission or license to do this. So reliability and trust is one of the most rare commodities, I would say, today. And this is when you have it with a trusted brand like Indra, this is why small startups like ours is really want to be attached and partner with Indra, because people trust that brand, this brand of Indra.
So you talked about a number of stakeholders. You know, you've got the airlines, you've got air traffic control, you've got the airport. How does one become the glue to bring all of this together?
Well, I think first of all, to become the glue, there needs to be a framework and as a mindset and as a will to be all on the same page. You know, it's like, I'm going to make the analogy with when you are delivering a project across different organizations. So nobody wants to be an organization and some of the processes might be on the critical path, but nobody wants to say, hey, I'm going to be late because nobody wants to face the penalties and so on. So that environment is not kind of like promoting information sharing and being open and transparent. So that's why I'm saying that the first thing that needs to happen is that the stakeholders involved need to be willing to share information, to say, well, I'm late, or because you are late, or because this aircraft is late, you'd better allocate the resources to another aircraft that might need them. So the willingness is there. There has been, I guess that we will talk about initiatives within the framework of CSR, where for the good and for the, in order to improve the aviation system as a whole, it has been decided that information needs to be shared across the whole aviation system and to make the best informed decisions. And that's why within the airport, we are sharing information. We are creating this platform. It's called Airport Collaborative Decision Making. It's been extended to capture more processes and time extension, let's say.
If I would add to that, you know, Peter, Diana and I, we go together and separately to many conferences and events at the aviation industry. And if I need to summarize that into two words, it's this. Like if you ask me, what is the hashtag for this event, I would say the most frequently used word will be sustainability, all right? And then the second phase will be, in order to achieve sustainability, we need to break the information silos, okay? Like instead of me as an airline holding the information close and not sharing that, or the ground handler, or the airport. Now, there is a consensus, and I think this consensus agreed that it's been established for many years, to say we need to break this information silos. How much effort is done on that domain is questionable. I would say, as Diana was alluding to, that yes, within the European community, yes, there is more camaraderie and more kumbaya sense that people will make fun on the other side of the pond, but it's actually working in the sense that the European community created the framework, created the ACDM, created the mechanism to share information. Now, how many people or how many organizations or to what extent they're willing to do that? Yes, there are various degrees of this. But the framework exists. Okay, so if you want to be on this, yeah. And when Diana is going to talk later maybe about the CESAR as kind of European community type of a funded project, it's nudge the airports and the airline and the ground handling to be part of that. Kind of, I would say, the playfulness of this experiment. Let's just play with that. Let's just explore with this technology. We, the EU, will fund that. And then once we show the commercial viability and feasibility of the solution, then you're off to the races. And then we see the RFPs coming out that we are now bidding for in multiple airports, following EU kind of exploratory type of an expedition saying, let's just play with that for a second, all right? And we love this approach. And we think it's, and we believe in it. But yes, as more people will share information, and will come more transparency, but transparency also means a little bit more vulnerability. It's very fashionable to talk about vulnerability today, but if you're willing to expose your weaknesses and you know that your weaknesses will not be weaponized against you, then you're going to see more of it. Can we trust that everybody will act that? This is where Diana and me have different kind of perspective on humanity, which is more philosophical. I kind of believe that if people are offered the opportunity to do the right thing, and it's easier, it's easy enough to do it. I think in most cases,
they will.
That's what I believe. I have a different perspective, but
I live in hope that this will come together. But before we talk about the project in more detail, I just want to ask you about AI and machine learning bringing all of these apps and systems together. Why can't we just have a single massive computer with lots and lots of data all in a single place processed up in the cloud?
As we said before, I mean, and we were discussing, I think everybody appreciates the complexity of the aviation system. So there are a lot of processes, a lot of stakeholders, a lot of technology involved, and also the humans as well with the variability that they might bring. So with all that complexity, making sense out of data can be challenging. So we need, first of all, high quality data. I guess that we will talk about possible sources of data before, but let's focus on your question about machine learning and artificial intelligence. So I think the human brain or even powerful traditional powerful computers might struggle to interpret and to make sense of such a complex set of data, and not only complex, intertwined, interrelated, and also the huge amount of data as well. So with all these intertwined variables, I think we need artificial intelligence, machine learning. We need to come up with predictive models that are going to not only be able to understand what is happening right now, but project that into the future to help more with not only real-time decision-making, but a more strategic decision-making and approach to things. So,
Diana, I'm just trying to get my head around all the different data sources, the data types, the data sets that have to be brought together. How are you going to go about that?
It is, and the thing is that the problem needs to be looked at in a holistic way. So we need to understand this is not only about having a limited view of the world. It's like, well, we need to understand the issue that we want to tackle. If we want to provide more compelling passenger experience to smooth and to expedite the passenger journey, to allow them to arrive to the nice side of this journey, actually. So we need to understand what is the potential of the different sources of data, and then we need to devise a strategy to deploy those kind of like, let's say, data sensors or data points. So we have seen that lately. I mean, traditionally we have used cameras in the airport, so everybody has seen them around, and with the video analytics techniques, we can kind of like leverage on that technology and extract a lot of information, which is powerful. We have seen as well, we are seeing now a high tendency, an increased tendency to use, for example, LiDARs that came up first in autonomous driving. What other sensors we could use? Very importantly as well, we are not we are no longer, or in most airports that we know, we are no longer kind of like using pen and paper to check when you are boarding or when you are passing through the security filters. And now all this process is automated. We have machine readers, code readers that allow to know where exactly you are throughout your passenger journey.
Where you are in the airport. So
you're using sensors, you're using CCTV, you're using traditional data sources like bookings and more traditional data sets. They're all very different, aren't they?
Yes. So vehicles, for example, could be fitted with kind of like the GPS sensor, so they could be fitted with ADS-B transponders, for example, as aircraft do. In terms of, to sense people, you cannot use, for example, you can use cameras, but you need to be mindful of GDPR aspects. Hence why the beauty of, for example, sensors like LiDAR that can sense the flesh, you know, not only metal, but flesh as well, and that they are GDPR compliant natively as well. So that's why it's important that we understand what we need to sense, what is the purpose that we are serving, and then come up with a strategy to deploy a sensor suite that is going to fulfill the objectives.
When you talk about the confusion that you felt about how do you make sense of all of it, this is a sentiment that we hear across the board, right? When we meet with airport executive or airlines, everybody within the ecosystem, they're being overwhelmed. First of all, the pace of changes, as you can imagine, and the amount of data is growing exponentially. So making sense of all of that, it's really a very daunting task. And I would say this is the governing principle. And for us, we take a little bit of a humble approach, but I would say this. In order not to get confused, Dan and I were speaking here, it's kind of a workshop for a couple of days that we're spending here together. For me, if I'm kind of, let's use Steve Jobs for a second. He was saying, we're in the intersection of technology and liberal arts, I would like to say, intersection of technology and philosophy, if you don't mind me using this word in your podcast. And we try to think very simply, which is our philosophy is ultimately customer-centric, all right? We know that humans are going to be here. We love humans. We don't want to replace them. We feel there is a place for them. Okay, we would like to accommodate this. And unlike some of the, you know, techno-utopians people, we take a very humble approach. And what do we mean by humble is that we spend time with the people at the ramp that are fueling, that are loading luggage, with the stewardess, with the various function at the tower. What we want to do is how can we make just incremental change in the lives of this vast ecosystem, one step after another, right? How we can incrementally, not disrupt, everybody's talking about disruption. We want to minimize the disruption and still make a meaningful impact on the way that they do their day-to-day. So basically, the way that we work is we go and ask them, with this thing that you do, what bit of information you would love to have at your fingertips, right? And when we do this, and then we follow this pretty much simple kind of recipe that I've just outlined here, then by breaking the problem, as you all know, from a big problem to a smaller one, I'm starting with helping target coordinator. I'm helping with the gate managers that want to know if there is a conflict in the gate utilization. I'm helping the baggage coordinator. So if you go one function after another, okay, there is now leapfrogging into the future. It's really painstakingly kind of step by step, one stakeholder function after another, incremental improvement that will lead ultimately to the exponential. So there is no way of jumping and leapfrogging and making shortcuts hacking your way into perfection. No, it needs to be gradual. And it didn't. Mm-hmm. And the technology, I always say that. People think that, okay, I'm using technology, that's it. No, technology at best is one third of the solution. The other two thirds are the people, personnel, and the processes. Okay, the fact that I'm giving you information, do you know what to do with that? If I'm raising a flag, an alert about something that is not going well, do you have the process to follow how to mitigate that? And these are big issues that organizations are tackling. So you're right about the data, but that was just the first thing. Okay, so what do you need to look at? And then once I give it to you, do you know what to do with it? Who are you going to call? What are you going to do with this, right? So it's a very long process. I'm just saying it requires a meticulous execution of the process and being mindful of the potential pitfalls, but also being mindful of the upside that can be there.
Did you know that during the Falklands War in 1982, there was a plan to put the Black Buck raids on steroids by sending an Avro Vulcan to bomb airfield targets on mainland Argentina, potentially returning to RAF Waddington the long way round via Chile, Easter Island, Tahiti, Hawaii, the USA and Canada? Did you also know that during the Second World War, a proposal was made to build B-29 superfortresses in the UK, powered by Bristol Centaurus engines? If your answers to the above are yes, you're probably a regular reader of The Aviation Historian, the quarterly journal, print and digital, that explores the less well-trodden paths of flying history. If your answers are no, visit theaviationhistorian.com and see what you're missing.
G'day, I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran from Plane Crazy Down Under.
And you're listening to Extended.
So, talk us through, how's this project going to work? I'm a bit of a aviation geek, of course, and I'm thinking of all the different systems, technologies and data sets and how they're going to come through. How's this project going to manifest itself?
What we are bringing on with this project is kind of like enhancing the human capability of observing processes. So if we have, you know, in the old times when you have a manufacturing facility, you used to be there observing how people worked and coming up with ideas about how to optimize the process itself. Formula One, they kind of like follow the same process, and from kind of like having a pit stop that, you know, take minutes observation and trial and error, they kind of like, you know, expedite the process for the car to be ready to continue to resume the race. So what we are doing is basically the same. So that's why we like using that analogy, that as we mentioned before. So I guess that many of us has observed what happens with the aircraft when it's on the ground and it's getting prepared for and ready for departure. So first of all, for a flight to depart, passengers and luggage need to be there. But of course, aircraft is an important stakeholder on this one as well. So they need to be ready. And if you have sat down once you have to wait until it's your time to board the aircraft, you might have observed that there are a lot of kind of like vehicles coming around the aircraft, and everybody now seems to know well where they need to position themselves and what they need to do. So basically, an aircraft needs fuel to go to the next destination. It needs to be cleaned up, so the passengers find it you know, nice and clean it when they come in. It needs to be, I mean, it has to have drinkable water. It has to be serviced in terms of sewage as well, have the catering, the food, everything, right? So all these processes involved, all the processes involved might take time. Sometimes some of them might happen in parallel. Very often the processes, well, of course, the processes, when they start and finish, depend on the availability of the resources. We don't have kind of like, if we have 50 positions for aircraft, we don't have 50 refueling trucks, you know, on an airport. Yeah. So the thing is that the resources need to be used wisely to maximize their output. So basically, this is what we are trying to do. Indra is an active stakeholder and participant in CESAR. It's an active member, which is a technological pillar of the European Union Single European Sky Policy, which is basically about making the aviation system in Europe more sustainable and making mobility smarter overall, right? So as part of this project, bottleneck was detected on let's say, the turnaround process. And that's why the initiative about piloting projects to explore technologies aimed at understanding turnaround were used in this framework that I mentioned, and hence we partnership with Intellect, a very niche company in the area of expertise, to make sure that we had the best solution possible.
If you try to tackle this problem that you talked about, the perfect pit stop, and you ask, okay, the various participants, what is the most crucial element that you need in order to perform better? Is they say to you, the number one problem that we have is that the plan that we got in the morning is no longer relevant when we get to noontime, all right? Even before that, okay? So you're getting a plan saying, okay, whatever airline X is going to be landing in 12 and then leaving in 12:50, and it doesn't arrive at 12, okay? So if you, and so the number one thing that they need, because there's so many deviations from the original plan that they've got, they need reliable information, ideally ahead of time, so they can be ready and be where you want them to perform the job that they've been trained for. Like, they know how to fuel the plane. They know how to do the cleaning. We don't need to train them on doing this. The problem is not teaching them what they need to do. The problem is that you don't tell them when. Okay? Yeah. Either you tell them ahead of time, or it's too late, or you just, and then they need to improvise. And when people start improvising, you're losing the perfect pit stop.
So how are you testing some of these technologies and systems? Obviously, not going to roll it out across the whole of the European system. Where's this been practiced? Where's this being tested?
Yeah, so we are having these pilots in multiple airports and airplanes and airlines across multiple continents, in India, and we have in the US, definitely in Europe, in the Middle East. And the one thing that we like as an AI company about this problem is the turnaround pretty much looks the same no matter where you land. Because ultimately, whether you're landing in the UAE or you're landing in India, the same set of services almost always need to be applied. And it's servicing the same type of plane. So there is a uniformity that when we train with the machine, I don't want to throw a buzzword, but when you train the AI model, there, so you can see things that are repetitive, that are very similar in terms of the vehicles being used, in terms of the pushback on the other elements, catering, and so on. So if we're looking at a problem that can be addressed with AI because you're looking for common patterns that repeat themselves, this domain of turnaround management proving itself to be a very good domain for AI because of the high degree of similarity between airports and gates. Now, obviously, you can see that there might be changes. You have narrow body and wide body, and obviously that's why the system needs to be trained. But ultimately, we definitely see that as an area that is ripe for this type of solution. CCTV, as you know, is something that is being used for many years. So we're leveraging existing infrastructure. And going forward, we believe that this type of technology, wherever you're going to land, we believe that there is going to be a technology provider delivering this technology or these services, this data to the airlines, airport, and the ecosystem, because all of them need that.
So where are we seeing this working? Are businesses using it? Airlines using it?
So the technology is working. So we have, during the trial projects, we have demonstrated that we are able to predict when the aircraft is going to be ready to make a move. So this is called TOBT, which is the time of the target of block time. So basically, right, we are able to predict accurately this time when it's needed, because with the current system, sometimes the TOBT gets updated, but sometimes there is a realization of the aircraft is going to be ready late when it's too late to do something about it. So it might be late to reallocate the resources that were already allocated the way they are. It might be late to do an update into the, for example, the departing sequence of the aircraft, because what we want, well, what you want is stability and to have kind of like a continuous flow rather than bottlenecks or aircraft
sitting.
Now, the target off-block time and the target startup approval time are not the same, are they? They're different things. Bringing these together, is this where machine learning comes into play and AI starts to learn where these things can be more joined up and make them more efficient?
In order to make it simple for the people, I would say TOBT and NTSAT is kind of derivative of this, but TOBT is kind of, you need to look at one metric that everybody needs, is TOBT marks the end of the turnaround and its indication, all right, we are ready for the next phase.
Now, right, why is it okay? Important?
Because one of the things, I don't think you can see what we have on the board behind us, but one of the things, the scarce resource at the airport is actually the runway. And having a smooth kind of flow of airplanes to the runway guaranteed that you're not losing capacity as an airport, right? So if you're asking what it takes for an airport to be efficient, is getting visibility into the readiness, which TOBT indicates that, for the airplane to be engaged in the bigger game, which is he's moving into the service area management, he's starting the taxi and then making its way into the runway. And the constant flow of airplanes ready, right? This was guarantees the smooth operation, especially during the busy time.
So where are we starting to see some results? Where are we starting to see some benefits from all of this?
Well, out of this process, you can get kind of like a benefits in the short term. So you can learn in real time what the symptoms of something, of an opportunity of improve. I don't want to say that symptoms of something going being wrong, but something that could be improved. And I'm talking about symptoms because, as we have been discussing before, it could be that, I don't know, the boarding is late, but maybe the problem is kind of like upstream because people are, you know, there are lots of queues in the screening area, you know, in the screening filters. So the thing is that in real time, we are able to communicate to the different stakeholders if there's an update or if the TOBT is going to be later than initially anticipated, right? But the beauty of this as well is that it's going to provide a huge amount of data that could be analyzed, for trends and to make predictions into the future. And with those predictions, we can make a better allocation of resources in real time, but also in strategic time when you actually can, for example, roster more people at particular times, you know, do something about it and not only thinking, oh, well, this is a missed opportunity.
And putting it, if I may add to that, Peter, is that we would like to get to take anxiety out of the traveling experience and anxiety out of the airport ecosystem to the extent that it's possible, all right? And the way to do that is, Dan and I were talking about the level of anxiety that you have when she's traveling with her kids to the U.S. Like she's got a trip, upcoming trip, and she needs to travel with the two toddlers with
a
stroller.
And
her husband is going to wait in the U.S.
It's very stressful, very stressful.
So just thinking about that makes you sweat, right? But if we can take the anxiety out of this, and you will be less surprised as a passenger, but also less surprised as an airport owner or airport manager. So the level of, like, there is no drama Obama, as we talked about earlier. If we can take the drama out of the airport, make it a little bit more boring, just when you board on a train, nothing exciting, we just go and you leave and we don't have all the drama. This is what we want to achieve. And how we're going to achieve this is when we talked about the TOBT. If flight is going to be late, and I can give you a warning 25 minutes, 30, 40, even maybe an hour before that, and you can communicate that to the passengers, okay? Think about the impact that it will make on the anxiety of everybody involved in this game. But at the moment, it's not where the ecosystem is. The moment is that you don't know, you're constantly being surprised, there's all this public announcement that you constantly need to pick. Maybe there's a gate change, maybe there's this, maybe there is a delay. There is too much drama happening in the airport. Now, we're not trying to say that we can fix it all, but what we try to say, if you know in advance about that and you communicate that effectively in a calm manner to everybody, saying that your flight is going to be delayed, but I'm going to give you a voucher and all of you can go and have some dinner or lunch.
Maybe you are less stressed when you are in traffic, stuck in traffic.
Or you're stuck in traffic and you think you're going to miss it and you arrive and then you see that the flight is going to be delayed in 2 hours. If the airline is proactive about that. So what we want to say is, yes, there are chaotic things happening, But if I know about that in advance, in a good spirit, I share that with you, as we talked about, the information silo. I know that I wasn't doing my job, but I'm letting you know, Diana, I'm going to be late with this. She would appreciate it. She maybe would not like the fact that I'm late, but at least thanks for letting me know, because now I can do something about it or make a better use of our time. What are you feeling? That this is not where the industry is at now. Okay? You come there and at your mercy. You're the mercy.
Okay, I'm going to put you both on the spot then. What are the sorts of metrics we can see change as a result of this project? What are the outcomes that we can expect? How will passengers see a change in the future?
So let's talk about the metrics that we would love to see is on-time performance. Okay?
Right.
Meaning the flight's supposed to leave at 12. Can we get better at this? Okay, at the moment, the average delay within the EU is 15 minutes. Can we shave that? Can we make a dent in this just a little bit, right? So on-time performance is one. And the other one, the metric will be the accuracy of the TOBT prediction, okay?
Yeah.
Let's be bold here. Let me push you a little harder on this. Can we get 1% off that 15 minutes? Can we get 5% of that 15 minutes? Or can we really be bold and eliminate all delays in the future? Or do we have to live in the real world? What's the expectation?
As we said before, I mean, it's not that I'm trying to elude the question. Even if we are into sports, so we said before, we are into marginal gains. I mean, if it was 1 minute, even if I said, I'm going to be conservative and I will tell you, Peter, it's only going to be 1 minute. It's 1 minute of every single aircraft in the sky. It's a long time in total. So
Understand.
If I could guarantee, if I could have 1 minute guarantee, I think it would be a good starting point if it could be more. But as I said, we have to take into account the compound effect of all this minute after minute after minute,
yeah.
even within an airline for a fleet. I was going to say as well that we are having a look at it by on the perspective of the airlines, but there are, I mean, on-time performance, of course, is very important. And what I was going to add on as well is that airports want to provide a compelling experience for their passengers. And it's not because they are like... it's because they are business as well. I mean, they want to have happier passengers that happily spend money on their shops and that come back and fly with them using their hubs to go to different places. So in those terms, I mean, most airports and most airport operators will have a series of KPIs and indicators. And the simple ones could be, when you are passing through a screening filter, you have the smiley faces or the sad faces about how was your experience. And it seems like a silly thing to us as a passenger, or it seems like pointless to rate them, or sometimes we only rate them when it's about the negatives. But the thing is that all these marginal gains in terms of not queuing, not having to wait for the aircraft to be ready, all these marginal gains would convert into happy faces, into returning customers, into increased non-aeronautical revenues, and so on. And it's, as I said, it's not only about the impact on capacity, but also about the side effects on the other dimensions.
If I can add to that, Peter, is that think about it. Let's say that what we're selling, just to give an analogy, let's say that we are making an application that can get you in shape, right? And then you say, how much in shape can I be with your application? Can I lose 10 pounds or 2 pounds, or what is it going to be? And it's ultimately, I would say, it's up to you, Peter, right? All I'm providing you is the metrics and the guidance to showing you whether you're in the right direction or not. How far can you go with this? It's up to you. So, and the reason I said it is not to get the responsibility off us, is because there is a myth sometimes associated with technology that technology solve the problem. No, technology just can indicate to you, like in a health system, all right, I can give you an MRI, I can give you a brain scan or all of that. But if you don't change your habits, if you don't change your diet, if you don't change the way you don't deal with stress, then all the metrics that I collect, if you don't act upon them, then you cannot come back to me and say, well, you promised me that I'll get in shape, but you need to exercise. Just buying the app would not do that for you. And I think this is something that we see, that people are a little bit kind of, they are not happy with this answer.
Before we wrap up and find out where we can find you online, a little bit off topic, but where do you think in the next couple of years AI is going to take the aviation industry?
The smart thing about using technology is knowing where to apply it, where it makes sense and where it doesn't. All right. Like, there are some things that the machines do better than humans, and there are some things that humans do better than machines. And being known to tell the difference between the two is very important. Okay. So predicting the weather, let's take it away. I mean, we take it for granted that I was traveling here to Madrid. I would look at the app and I knew for a fact that the weather forecast that I see is what I'm going to experience here in Madrid. I didn't check two systems you mentioned at the beginning. I checked just one in my app and I packed the luggage according to what I saw in the app. And we don't even think about it at the moment. But in the past, it wasn't like this. So what I'm saying, when you have a complex environment where you have too many, as Diana was talking about, too many moving parts, and you need to see whether there is a pattern in that or not, we think that this is where AI does better because the computing power of that is enormous. Okay?
All right.
Let me also ask you then, what exciting things does Diana and Udi have on their project list?
We are doing exciting things. As I said, we are tackling the whole, well, we are helping airports to become more sustainable and to do more. I would say, I don't want to say to do more with less, but to at least do more with
what they've got. To be more efficient.
Yeah, to be much more efficient.
What about safety?
We are talking in particular today, we are talking about the solution we've got. And we are talking about reducing the, I would use that as an example, right? Because Indra is an organization that covers aviation end to end. So we are making air traffic more efficient and allowing the controllers to do their job better so they don't put aircraft the same place at the same time, which is safety 101, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about before as well that what we want to do with all this technology is to synergize that technology with a human. So we reduce the amount of stress for the traveler, but we also reduce the amount of stress for the operators. Stress for the operators time pressure on the operators translates into stress. Stress translates into errors, and those errors might have safety consequences. So I think just using today's example, just picking up on today's technology, which is kind of like a limited view of all what we do is a good way of saying that we are helping to improve safety because we are reducing the workload of the operators having to report themselves. We are reducing the time pressure on the ramp. The ramp is an area where sometimes, it's not like an aircraft, it's not the cockpit, it's not air traffic control, but sometimes it doesn't get as much attention until we have, for example, a casualty occurring. So, as I said, this solution in particular might bring safety benefits, and we have safety features incorporating thanks to the technology and to the algorithm brought by our partners on this endeavor. But I think we need a second podcast to talk about that.
We do,
and I'm coming back to you. But before we go, where can we find you online?
So Indra can be checked up online using www.indracompany.com. And we are as well quite active on LinkedIn, Instagram, on all the social networks.
Okay. And Udi, where can we find your business online? Exciting.
Yeah, so you can find me on Intel Act. It's Intel, LLM-ACT.com. Udi Segal, also on LinkedIn, you can find me. It spells UDISEGA, again, LL. You can find me online, and we'll be happy to continue this conversation with you or with the listeners. If they have any questions for us or any queries, we'll be more than happy. We're passionate about this, as you can see. We're excited.
Okay.
And in terms of the roadmap, the roadmap is actually, I don't want to give it away to our competitors. I know you're a very popular podcast. So in case they're listening, we're going to follow what the market demands. And I can tell you, within the aviation system, there are more problems to solve than just this one.
It's really exciting times. So thank you so much, Diana and Udi, for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Peter.
That's it then. We'd like to thank White Hearts for our fabulous music and Mick Ogie at The Aviation Historian for his ongoing support. You can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter, and you can find Tim, Ellie and Gareth on the extended Twitter, Facebook, Threads and Instagram feeds. That's it with the arrival of the music. It's goodbye from Diana and Udi.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, guys. Get in touch if needed.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned to this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website. Please do ask before using anything you hear. The programme's produced with a Creative Commons licence.
Please leave us a review wherever you play your podcast. It genuinely helps grow our programme and broaden its reach. You can also review the programme and leave us feedback on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to email us, our email address is getinvolved@aviationextended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of Extended.
From across the globe, from the centre of aerospace, and now to you.
The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
Extend it!
This is XTP Media.